This is a rain replay from 2005.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Rain Report. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. What does amateur radio have to interest a 14-year-old boy or girl today? This week, we conclude some observations on that subject from Steve Bible, N7HPR. Steve is Vice President of Tapper and active member of AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. Some contend the licensing structure of amateur radio in the United States is an obstacle to youngsters becoming ham operators. Steve Bible disagrees.
Let's review. We've got three licenses. We have technician, general, and extra. And technician basically is your 50 megahertz and up. If you're involved in satellite communications, you can easily do DX. But of course, that's specialized equipment, and that's pretty advanced ham radio. There's also Earth, Moon, Earth. Again, pretty advanced equipment. Little specialized setup in order to do something like that, but that could interest them. Why does it always have to be HF bands? Is a technician 50 megahertz and up enough? It seems to be enough for quite a few people. Now, if we want to take a look at the HF bands, now we have to become a general. Really, the licensing structure is a 35-question test for technician. It's just a written. And then, of course, to go to generals, 5 words per minute code. And what is it, 25 questions? And I guess you'd have to debate that with your friends, whether or not that is an encumbrance to a youngster get involved in ham radio. Now, of course, we've known over the years that there's been many advocates trying to get rid of CW as an entry requirement. Even the FCC has been trying to do that for a number of years, but amateurs don't want it to happen. And their main argument is that, you know, if we do away with CW, then the bands are going to become like CB radio. News is that the barn door is already open. Would you take a 14-year-old boy or girl and tune across the HF bands with them today and let them listen to the conversations that are going on now to see if you can get them interested?
No, I would not on 80 meters at night. One could argue that 80 meters and 20 meters are not real safe listening for adolescents, for teenagers to listen to. And the irony is, those who they would be listening to are general class and above.
There is no class of license that makes a person a better operator over another. What makes a good operator is a whole community of people that help each other, help hone your skills. But if you're going to tune across 80 meters or 20 meters, and as you know, there's way too many inappropriate conversations on the HF bands, and it's too easy to tune those up and hear something, and there's just no way you're going to turn that tuning dial fast enough for that teenager not to hear it. And then that's it. As soon as they hear that conversation, they hear how bad it is, they're immediately turned off. Another thing is like, okay, now you want to show something off like slow scan television. So you get the program on your personal computer, you hook up your radio to the sound card, and now you're going to start showing them something really whiz-bang, slow scan TV. You know why it's whiz-bang? Because now I can send pictures around the world. It's one step more than voice, so this should have a big wow factor. And then do you know what kind of pictures you see going across the HF waves? Usually scantily clad women. So if you want to sit there and say the licensing structure is in such a way that impedes youngsters from getting on the HF bands, you know, what kind of a discussion are we having here? What is our goal here? What are we trying to accomplish? We got started earlier on talking about the future of ham radio. And then, of course, we always have that side conversation of ham radios going down. We are our own worst enemies in that respect. This is a guess, and I think I'm fairly close on this one. A lot of hams that bring youngsters into ham radio bring them in under what ham radio should be in their minds. In other words, if you want to be a ham, you got to know CW. And then, of course, that's kind of figuratively shoved down the youngster's throat. And if they don't like the taste of it, they'll go off and do something else. And of course, we'll read in the magazines every once in a while about this exceptional youngster who's a ham and is doing all these great things and gets their extra ticket and all that. And you know, they're the exception, not the rule. For some strange reason, they happen to conform to the present day ham radio paradigm. But if we truly want ham radio to thrive, if we truly want ham radio to grow and we want ham radio to be here in the future, do we continue making ham radio fit an existing paradigm and then force that on newcomers? Or do we allow ham radio to evolve and become that thing that really wowed us when we were kids and keeps us in the hobby, so to speak? We've got to break out of this time capsule and allow ham radio to evolve. It's got to evolve. And it is evolving. And the evidence of that is that conversation we had where we went back 20 years and we looked around and saw the state of ham radio in 1986. And then we kind of figuratively said to ourselves, let's predict ham radio in 20 years. And we saw that we couldn't do that. That evolution of ham radio from 1986 to 2006, did that happen because hams created a time capsule and forced ham radio to fit an existing paradigm? That rhetorical question is a resounding no. Ham radio did evolve, and it evolved because there was really interesting, neat, technical things that particular hams around the world wanted to tinker with, and then they put it out for all to enjoy. And of course, there's a big argument that internet has ruined ham radio. I say the internet's made ham radio even better than it was, because now we can have this virtual community and learn from one another. Whereas before, if you were a kid growing up in a city that didn't have a ham radio club, how were you ever going to become a ham? You could read all you wanted. You only had a couple of magazines. Now, if you're a kid that's interested in ham radio, you could go up on the internet, and there's just a wealth of information. And you don't even have to just read the United States websites. You can read about hams around the world and get involved in mailing lists. And, of course, the internet's a way of disseminating a lot of these new modes. Take a look at PSK31. In 1986, would we have predicted PSK31? I don't think we would have, but we wouldn't have PSK31 if it wasn't for the internet, if it wasn't for a person tinkering with that technology and then putting it out for everybody to try. And now it's a very, very popular mode that everybody enjoys.
You're listening to the thoughts of Steve Bible, N7HPR, VP of Tapper, and one ham who has given considerable thought to the need to present ham radio to kids on their level. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to therainreport.com.
So my statement, I suppose, is allow ham radio to evolve. Allow ham radio to become that thing that it needs to be to really energize, wow, and get young people involved today and in the future. We need to stop being our own worst enemy in forcing youngsters into a time capsule or a ham radio paradigm, a set of rules that says, you know what, to be a ham, you've got to be A, B, C. And it's not. To be a ham is just to have this spirit of wanting to tinker and wanting to communicate via RF. And that RF can be anything from DC to daylight. And we can either choose to talk to the neighbor's house or around the world. And we can choose to do it via voice, CW, PSK31, any number of modes, even if it means that it goes through the internet and pops up somewhere else. Ham radio is a spirit. It's a spirit of going out there and calling CQ and saying, is anybody out there, and having a conversation. Way back in 1995, had a very interesting experience, and I even wrote about this in QST back in 1995. There was a thing called Internet Phone. And it was a program that you downloaded and you put on your computer. And what a lot of hams were doing was downloading this, and for their nickname or their handle, they put their call sign. What was interesting is even non-hams, everybody around the world were downloading and putting internet phone on their computer, and basically allowed them to do a phone conversation with anybody on their computer anywhere around the world. And it was interesting. It wasn't that people were using it to intentionally dial Aunt Maggie or Uncle Bob. People were doing random calls. I marveled at that. I watched that. And in fact, I was even on there doing it myself. And it was no more different than going out there saying CQ, CQ, trying to strike up a conversation. Now, how we do that, we need to let that be whatever it needs to be in order to get up there and call CQ, whether it's hit a spark, a continuous wave, phase shift keying, internet phone, or IRLP or Echolink. It still gets back to what does amateur radio have to look like, have to be like, have to taste like, have to smell like in order for people to communicate. I saw a piece on the local news, and the local high school was instituting rules for kids having cell phones on campus. The rule is kind of one, if you keep it put away, then nobody's going to take your cell phone away from you. But it was funny because here's the reporter on the high school campus, got a bunch of kids around them, and they're all waving their cell phones in the camera. And these kids would not be separated from their cell phones. Why are those kids not separable from their cell phones? Is it because they love the technology, because they love the feel of RF in their hands? No, it's because they can dial up their friends on there. And I watched that, and I thought to myself, it's those kids wanting to communicate with their friends. That's the big issue. Every one of those cell phones in their hands could be a ham radio. If we want to sit there and use the discussion of what does ham radio have to be like today to interest a teenager today, well, that news broadcast is a good example of that, of what that ham radio's got to look like. Would you have seen that scenario 20 years ago? Would we have seen local kids at a local high school 20 years ago all with ham radios in their hands, all being in trouble with the teachers because they're using them too much? But the thing of it is that cell phone and ham radio are the same doggone thing. Why can't those kids have a ham radio in their hand? If you think about it, it's a heck of a lot cheaper because you're not paying monthly fees. Now you're going to have to sit down with a bunch of kids and probably have a focus session of some sort and find out why those cell phones in their hands are not ham radio. So now people listening to this can sit there and say, well, yes, it can. It can be all 2-meter radios and stuff like that. And then we were discussing earlier about how we're our own worst enemies. Man, I have seen so many old timers shout kids off of repeaters, don't need them on our repeaters, blah, 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 type of thing. We keep being our own worst enemies when it comes to that, because there's been many a communities getting the kids involved on the repeaters only to get shouted down by the adults, because the repeaters are adult territory. Ham radio has got to evolve to the technology that interests people today and in the future.
That was Tapper Vice President Steve Bible, N7HPR, expressing his thoughts about what it takes to make amateur radio relevant to young people today. Steve was interviewed by RAIN founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2005, RAIN, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.